All right. Dang. I see what you mean, Dan. I see what you mean. All right. So anyway, we're continuing our series this week called Overcorrect. And if you haven't caught any of it, I'll kind of give you some of the backstory and some of the things we've talked about to this point. The first week was Father's Day, so we talked about what it means to be a man. And it's just one of my favorite rants in all of sports history. His name is Mike Gundy. He's the coach of Oklahoma State, the football team. And he just goes into this tirade about how he's a man. He's 40. And I don't know why 40 is so significant with manhood, but that's what he talked about. So anyway, we just talked about what it really means to be a man because, you know, culture will tell you what it means to be a man, but I think the Bible has a lot better insight as to what it means to be a man, and that's my opinion, and it's a good one, so just go with it, right? Right. So, and then last week we talked about grace and truth and how we have a tendency to kind of go to one side or the other when in reality we should be somewhere in the middle. Like there should be a lot of grace in our life, but there's also truth. There's things that we believe and things that we adhere to and principles that we live by and all of that stuff, but we also give ourselves and others room to make mistakes, and that's what grace is. And so this week what we're going to talk about, there's some similarities in what we talked about last week and what we talked about this week, but it's also different enough that I think it's worth kind of diving into a little bit. And what we're talking about this week is faith and works. And what we do, it's kind of the same thing we do with grace and truth. With faith and works, what we do is we kind of go to one side or the other. And what we've made is this, it's a man-made spectrum where you have to go to one side towards faith or you have to go towards the other side towards works. And it was never intended. There was never supposed to be a spectrum. They were always supposed to work together in unison. But for some reason, men or, you know, humanity has made this kind of, they've pitted them against each other as enemies. And it was never intended to be that. And if you don't believe me, just go read a history book because wars have been fought over faith and works. Like religions have split and countries have split, and you've got Protestantism and Catholicism, if you're going to say it properly, right? And the Great Reformation and all of these things because of people's belief that faith is the only thing that'll save you and people's belief that works is the only thing that'll save you. And the truth is, yes. Right? Yes. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. You don't have to overcorrect to one side. You don't have to overcorrect to the faith side. You don't have to overcorrect to the work side. There's a balance to be struck somewhere in the middle. And we're going to look at the value in each of these, the dangers in going to, you know, too far to either side. And then we're just going to kind of look at what this balance should look like. So let's start with faith. How many of you know that without faith, we don't have a faith? Wow. That's deep, right? I get it. Like, faith is a cornerstone of the Christian religion. Without faith, we have no faith, like our religion. I'm going to continue. And that's fine. Like, faith is incredible. And it's all well and good unless you take faith to mean that it's only what you believe that matters. Because here's the problem with that. Like, if you really, really believe something, belief is a feeling, it's an emotion, it's something that's inside that drives you. So let me ask you a question. Love would be similar to that, correct? So love is a feeling, it's an emotion, it's something that is inside, that's intangible, that drives you to do certain things. Like, if you say that you love somebody, that leads you to do things for them because you care about them and you care about their well-being. And so faith is not really any different. It's something inside of us. It's this intangible driving force that leads us to do things, right? It's faith and works. And so, but when you kind of go to the other side and it's only what you believe that matters and not what you do, like, which is just, it's so dumb to me. Like, I can't wrap my mind around this idea that it's only what you believe and not what you do that matters. And we'll talk about this more later. And this is due in large part to people kind of, we live in a soundbite society, right? We live in a culture where somebody could say, I mean, you could have a 30-minute monologue and it was incredible. And they said one thing that can be taken out of context and all of a sudden they're the worst person in the world. Like, that's the world that we live in. We live in a soundbite and snippet world. And what happens is that kind of carries over into the way that we read the Bible or we hear something and we take it to, you know, be truth for us and then we run with it. So, like, the verse that we looked at last week is Ephesians chapter 2, verse 8 and 9. You guys remember that? I hope so. And I don't know if we've ever done this. We're using the same verse 2 weeks in a row. And everybody's like, did you memorize it? Good, we're going to do it again. By the end of this week, you're going to have it memorized. So it says, for it is by grace that you have been saved through faith, and this is not from yourselves. It is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast. And so that's what we do. We take that and we stop, like we talked about last week. We stop right there and we think, okay, it's only my faith, because that's what it says, right? It's only my faith. It's not of myself. It's the gift of God, not by works, can't be by what I do, so that no one can boast. Again, so that's what we do. We stop right there, but that's only one part of the equation. Like we talked about last week, verse 10 says, okay, I get it. That's the gift, and it's the grace that comes from God, and you have to have faith to believe that that's where it all starts. But in verse 10, it's not a contradiction, it's a continuation. In verse 10, it says, we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works. So it just said, I mean, do you think that that's a contradiction? It says that you are saved by faith. It's not of yourselves. It's a gift of God, not by works. And then right after that, it says that you were created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. That's been the plan all along. That would be how I would have wrote it if I were Paul. That's just me. Of course, if I would have wrote it, you guys would have been like, I ain't reading the Bible. Anyway. It's not a contradiction. It's a continuation. It's like, hey, faith is the starting point. That's where it all starts. But then what you do kind of shows what it is that you believe. Like, again, coming back to this analogy of love, if I love you and I always do things to hurt you, do I really love you? Like, if I say that I love my wife and I treat her like garbage, then I don't really love her, right? That was an organ. We really need an organ, because so let's kind of think about it like this. Faith is the initial step in salvation and redemption, and we get that from the verse that we just looked at. But it would be the same thing. Imagine that a child is born, right? Because that's what it uses this language and kind of this metaphor in Scripture, that our new life, our new creation, is being born again, is kind of the re-beginning for us as followers of Jesus. Like, we lived our life, and because we have faith in Jesus, we're now born again. So it would be like a baby being born, but remaining an infant for the rest of their life. That was a good analogy, apparently. Could you imagine? Like, that? There's so much more that's intended for the baby. He's supposed to mature and grow up. And that's what it is with, it's the same way with faith. Like, if you only have faith and your works never back up the faith that you say that you have, you're like that baby that never grows up and never matures. You never live out the purpose that you were created to live out. And so I think it's just really important that we get that, to stop at just having faith and not reinforce that lifestyle, not reinforcing that lifestyle with what you do, then it leads to a really feeble representation of what Christianity is. And that's just kind of the world that we live in. TBH. Why do people do that? Tell me why. Inbox me. TBH. Get a lot. I didn't finish that statement, so you guys can, I don't know. And we get this, this happens in our culture a lot. It really does. Just because, here's another way to think about it. Just because you're someone's child doesn't mean that you get to treat them however you want to treat them, or you get to do whatever you want to do. Just because, you know, so-and-so is your daddy doesn't mean that daddy ain't going to spank your butt if you get out of line. And so, I mean, and this goes back, I mean, hundreds and hundreds and even thousands of years. The oldest, one of the oldest commands in all of the Bible is to honor your father and mother. And so, like, faith is, just imagine you're born into this family. This family has expectations of you. And so if you just do whatever it is that you want to do and you don't live up to the expectations that the family has for you, then do you guys get that? Is a strange analogy, and I hope that it makes a lot of sense. And so it is with our father. Once we're born into this family, there are expectations from us. It's not just what we believe, but it's also what we do. Like it says in Romans chapter 12, it's at this point that our lives become a living sacrifice. Like, man, it's so funny to me how you can just find little things and stake your claim in that and neglect so many other things that kind of contradict what it is that you've staked your claim in just because it's not convenient for you. Yeah. Romans chapter 12, verse 1 says, therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. Now, let me clarify. We ain't killing ourselves. We ain't drinking Kool-Aid. We ain't doing anything weird like that. A living sacrifice. That means every single day as you live, that you sacrifice your life to God and the way that you do things and the way that you treat people and the way that you act and your devotion to Him and all of that stuff. That is a living sacrifice. Holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. So you see there's a continuation of faith. Faith is just the starting point. And works kind of backs up. It's a continuation of our faith. Faith is absolutely paramount. It's our belief that is the catalyst for any action that will follow, right? Like, because if you don't believe something strong enough, it's never going to lead to action. If you don't care about something deep enough, then it's never going to lead to some kind of action that follows that concern or care or passion, right? And so faith is really, 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 really important. It's the catalyst, but there's more. It's not just faith. It's faith and works, and that's what we're going to talk about next. It's a proper segue, right, is works. So on the other end of this spectrum, man-made as it is, the spectrum like we talked about, we find works. And like I said, some cultures and religions and nations have split over this idea of faith and works being pitted against each other. And it's just not the way that it was intended to be. Some people believe that it's only what you do that will save you or put you in right standing with God or change how God views you. And the problem with this line of thinking is endless. Like, there are a lot of problems with that line of thinking. Because let's start right here. You know you. Like, I know me. And if it all depends on me, I'm in trouble. And if your life and your right standing with God, I kind of expected a better response. Apparently, you don't know you as well as you should know you, right? Like, if your right standing with God and you're being pleasing to God all depends on you and how you act and the things you do and the words you say and the thoughts you have, you might be in trouble. Because I know for a fact I'd be in trouble. I mean, I could go down a list of things that I thought this week about people. For some reason, we were in Dallas last week. I don't know why y'all think this is funny. I bare my soul to you people and all of my struggles, and you laugh. So we were in Dallas last week, and Shelly and I were talking about how it's good that we don't live in Dallas because I'd just be mad all the time. Like, I'm driving, and fools don't know how to drive, so I'm starting to drive like, you know, them, cutting them off, you know. And, man, people won't let you over when you got to get over. You've got three interstates merging, and you got to get over, and they're, like, you know, hogging the spot. I'm like, come on, Bogart. And so what I do is we figured this principle out a long time ago, just nose over, and they'll get out of the way. Like, so do you just start going, and they'll move. And so, anyway, I was, you know, thinking awful things about people. And what we think is really important, because God knows our thoughts. Anyway, I don't know, how did we get on that? The problem with this line of thinking that it's only what we do that matters and kind of determines our relationship with God and our the success of our relationship with God is really endless. Let's have a little history lesson, right? I love history. There's a guy named Martin Luther, not to be confused with Martin Luther King, because so many people do this. Kids are like kids these days because, you know, you don't take time to put down your device and you don't know anything about history. Of course, old people don't either, so we're all kind of screwed. I mean, you know what I'm saying. Humans are so busy that we don't take time to kind of clarify some of the really important things in history, or like the difference between Martin Luther and Martin Luther King. And so Martin Luther lived hundreds of years before Martin Luther King. And Martin Luther is the guy that was at the head of the Protestant Reformation. And there was a period in history when they had gone so far to the side of works that things by all accounts had gotten out of hand. Like, it was bad. I've heard stories about, you could actually, this is how crazy it was. When somebody dies, this is what we do today. We just lie at their funeral and make them look good. Like, they could be the worst person in the world, and then the pastor is expected to get up and talk about how awesome they were and this legacy that they're going to have, when everybody knows well and good that that's not the truth. So that's how it is today. But back then, what had happened was when people died, they honestly believed that you could go to the priest, give him some money, and purchase that person's salvation. And so they could go to heaven. It didn't matter how they lived,
But now, because of this work that you're doing for them, this penance that you're paying, that you could purchase their salvation. And I'm like, where's that at in the Bible? I don't know how you get that far off with it. I'd even heard stories of people who felt so guilty and so much shame because their works were insufficient that they would climb up flights of stairs on their knees. Can you imagine that? Like, I don't like walking upstairs. They would climb up flights of stairs on their knees. Like, it was excruciating and it was painful, but they felt that that was the only way they could make up and kind of compensate for the guilt and the shame that they felt because their works were insufficient. And so you see the problem with this line of thinking. If it all depends on you, you know you. Like, and if we were living in this time, we would be climbing up flights of stairs on our knees because we know of our inadequacies. That's a good word to say when you're trying to talk fast, isn't it? Inadequacies, right? Everybody's like, what just happened? Like, we know what our failures are. We know our shortcomings, and we feel the guilt of it sometimes. And so we would be doing the same thing that they were doing. And it's just not supposed to be like that. Like I said, they had kind of overcorrected so far that things had gotten so far out of hand. And that's the danger with this line of thinking. If we believe that it all depends on us and how we live and how we act and our works, then that's what tends to happen when we forget about the grace of God. That's how we live our lives. And so my question is, if that's how it's supposed to be, then why in the world did Jesus die on the cross? Like, why would Jesus come? Like, let's just think about this for a minute. Jesus was a king before he came to the earth. You know what kings do? Whatever they want. I mean, if he wanted to sit in heaven and be a king and eat popcorn all day, he could do that. But he chose to come to the earth where he knew that he would be subjected to all kinds of torment and torture and rejection and loneliness. And he did it, like it says in Romans chapter 5, verse 8, it says that while we were still sinners, that he came and died on the cross for our sins because he knew that we couldn't do it for ourselves. He did for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. He saved us. And so it's important that we get that. Your works can never save you. As important as they are, as they prove your faith and all of that stuff, that will never save you. It's only your faith that is, you guys, it's so confusing because we're like, we're preaching against one thing, and then we start preaching against the thing that we were just preaching about that's so good, and it seems like a contradiction, but it's not. It's just making sure that we find the balance in the two. So again, your works will never save you. It all starts with faith, but then what happens is that your works back up your faith. They prove your faith. Obviously, we believe that what we do is important. Like, we believe that, like, you should back up what you say that you believe, you know. I think it's like this. It's works is a byproduct of recognizing what has been done for us. Like, because we realize what Jesus did for us, and it was this incredible love, and we know that we could never repay it because it was the gift of God and all of that stuff, what we do is we just, as a result of that, as a byproduct of that, we work, we honor the gift, like we talked about last week. There's this verse in James chapter 2. You guys have probably heard it. And man, it paints this picture so clearly of what this looks like. And this is where it starts. What good is it, my brothers and sisters? That would be you. Let's just pretend for the sake of the conversation, I'm James, and you're the brothers and sisters, all right? Good. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? That was a question. I like the way that James asked questions kind of in the middle of this story. He says, suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well-fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? Now let's stop for just a minute. Like, I believe that this is the world that we live in. Like, I believe that this is the world that would, if you could kind of translate this into reality, that's the reality that we have. This is the world that we live in. And so what happens is everybody has faith, right? They believe, like, there's so many people that are Christians or believe this or believe that and believe that, you know, God is the only way to salvation and all that stuff. I know I'm kind of jabbering and gibbering and gibberish and all that stuff, but this is the world that we live in. And so what had happened was that we kind of neglect the other side of the coin. And so if one of you says to them, it just makes so much sense. We think that our faith is the only thing that matters. We say, go in peace, keep warm and well fed. but you do nothing about their physical needs, then what good is it? Like, you see somebody on the side of the street who has no food and has no clothes and has no place to stay, and you say, God bless their soul. What good is it? Right? And I think that we've overcorrected so far to the point, like, we've gone so far the other way from the era of the Protestant Reformation. Now we're on the faith side, where we have so much faith, we don't do anything that proves our faith. Like, I get so, I'm so disgusted at the condition of Christianity, because everybody is a Christian, but nobody does anything. Like, we have this belief. This is what it's kind of morphed into, at least the way that I perceive it is. Like, this is what a Christian is. You get up, you say a little prayer, you go to work, you come home, you raise your kids, you go to bed. And that's it. And so you fast forward 40 years, and all you've done is you said a little prayer, you went to work, you raised your kids, and you went to bed. And you didn't give a crap about so many people who live in utter misery and contempt, and you just live your life neglecting the fact that so many people are hurting, and if you lived your life like that, your life means nothing. Because here's the deal. Jesus said even evil people take care of their kids. Like, we think that's the highest priority and the highest goal in life, and it's important to take care of your kids and all of that stuff. But if you stop there, you have missed the point. Like, I'm so bothered, I'm so irritated. When people, they have needs, we're like, God bless them. And God's like, you bless them. Boom. I think you get the idea. Like, I mean, our works are really, really important. Listen, you don't even say that you have faith if you're not going to do anything to prove that you have faith. Don't say that you're a Christian who's filled with the love of God if you don't do anything to extend the love of God to other people. If people need help, freaking help them. Like, this is the world that we live in. Like, we're so selfish and we're so consumed with the things that we want to do and the things that make us feel good and the things that make us comfortable that we neglect people. And what did Jesus say? He's like, the most important thing in all of religion is to love me. The second most important thing is just like it. Love people. I don't understand how we disconnect the two. I need a rag. I don't know why I look like, I don't know. I'm going to leave that alone. So this is the solution to the problem. Just like it was last week. It was never intended to be or. It was never faith or works. It was never that. And I don't know how we make it like this. I think it's just because we live in a world, or maybe the human condition is such that we have to have enemies. Have you noticed that? Like, we're not content. We like drama so much that we have to have enemies, and we do the same thing in our religious efforts, that we have to have enemies, so we make faith and works enemies, and they were never intended to be enemies. And so I think the perfect solution is symmetry in these areas. It's to have faith and works. I'm reading a book called Amazing Grace, interestingly enough, right? About a guy named William Wilberforce. And this is what's funny to me. William Wilberforce is probably one of the most important people in the history of humanity. And 99% of the people that I talk to don't even know who he is. Like, that's because of the world that we live in. If you're not a rock star, I'm going to stop. So William Wilberforce is responsible for ending the slave trade in the 1807 when it actually passed. But he spent 20 years of his life devoted to ending the slave trade. And he gave up so much of his personal ambition and things that he wanted to do to make sure that it ended. And it ended 50 years before it ended, before slavery was abolished in the United States. Like, he was the front runner and the predecessor and the one that pushed for all of this stuff to happen. But there was a point in his life. He was 24 years old. He was extremely intelligent. He went to Cambridge, which is a very prestigious university. And so this guy was absolutely brilliant. And he wanted to pursue a career in politics. So he went to this university. It was prestigious for that. And he had already gotten into politics. And at 24 years old, he had what they called the Great Change. And so he felt like, you know, at this point in his life, we call it salvation or you're a new creation or however you want to say it. He got saved. And so at that point, he decided that he felt as if the only way that he could honor God would to be withdraw from politics and withdraw from his efforts to help humanity and essentially join a convent and be a nun. Not a nun. What is a dude? It was a monk. There we go. Gender issues, right?
And so that's what he thought he was supposed to do with the rest of his life. But his best friend was a guy named William Pitt. I know this is a lot of information, who went on to become the prime minister of Great Britain. And this is, he wrote him a letter, and this is what he said. And what's funny, William Pitt wasn't even a Christian. And he wrote William Wilberforce a letter about Christianity, and he called him on it. And this is what he said. There's a lot of it that's like, they talk much more educated than we talk, because we're like, you don't need to do that. But the way that he said it was so much better. He says, "Forgive me if I cannot help expressing my fear that you are nevertheless deluding yourself into principles which have but too much tendency to counteract your own object." See what I mean? The point is, he's like, hey, listen, what you're saying, the principles that you're saying that you believe, they're not helping you reach the end, this great object of abolishing slavery that you've said is so important. And to render, this is where, man, this is so good. He says, and to render your virtues and your talents useless, both to yourself and to mankind. If he would have withdrawn and he would have just went and lived in his convent and just had a relationship with God and just had faith, then he would have neglected this humanity and mankind with the talents that God had given him and the purpose that God had given him. And he says, I am not, however, without hopes that my anxiety paints this too strongly. He's like, look, I'm going to tell you like it is. For this man, this is so good. Listen, for you confess that the character of religion is not a gloomy one. And this guy's not even a Christian. He's like, you tell me that Christianity is about hope. And what is hope unless you offer it? And that is not, and it's not that of an enthusiast. But why then this preparation of solitude? Why are you going to go away and go by yourself? Which can hardly avoid tincturing the mind either with melancholy or superstition. I love the way these guys talk and write. It's so cool. I mean, I'm reading this book, and I've got a dictionary with me as I read the book, because I'm like, I don't know what that means. And this is kind of the kicker. This is what, man, I read this, and I was like, wow. Like, this guy who's not even a Christian understands this better than most Christians that I know, including myself. And he says, if a Christian may act in the several relations of life, must he seclude himself from them all to become so? Surely, the principles as well as the practice of Christianity are simple and lead not to meditation only, but to action. I'm going to read that one more time. Surely the principles as well as the practice of Christianity are simple and they lead not only to meditation, they lead not only to faith, but to action. And so his friend, he's like, look, here's the deal. Like, you could seclude yourself and have the greatest faith in all of the world, but that faith wouldn't make an impact on the world that you were called to live in. You're missing the point if you think it's all about faith. It's about faith and works. And it was his faith that drove him to do this great work. Like, literally, this guy gave his life to this great object of abolishing slavery in the 1700s. And it cost him so, man, like, we don't understand. Like, he spent 2 decades of his life, and his character was assassinated. He spent a lot of his own money, and the hours and hours that he spent devoting himself to this thing was all driven by his faith. Like, his faith is what led him to do what it is that he did. So they're kind of supposed to be in unison, not in opposition. And I think that's the perfect solution to our little discussion today. It's not just about faith, as important as that is. It's about living out that faith in whatever arena that God has called you to. Like, you know, we're all called to different things, and we all have different gifts, and we all have different talents, but our faith drives us to do things in that arena, and we've got these talents that we're supposed to live out that faith in these arenas that God has given us. Faith was never intended just to be a dormant feeling. Like, and man, I feel like that's kind of what happens a lot of times. We suppress faith to the point where it's just this thing inside of us that's there, but it doesn't really affect our lives. And it doesn't affect the decisions that we make on a daily basis. And it doesn't affect the way that we treat people. And it was just never intended to be that. Like, I don't understand how something as important as faith, we reduce it to just this thing. And it was never intended to be just this thing. It was intended to be this life-giving source of hope and passion. And faith is the thing that drives us to make the decisions that we make every single day. And faith is the thing that helps us to do difficult things and to not quit and to not stop and to not grow weary while doing good, like it says in Galatians. Like, it's faith
that does that. It's faith that reinforces our works, but it's works that reinforces our faith. They feed off of each other, and that's the way that it was supposed to be. That was the intent. That's the way that we're supposed to live our lives. I heard this quote one time, and you've probably heard of this. I didn't know. I thought it was by somebody else, but I looked it up, and it was by a guy named Augustine of Hippo. I'm not making that up. I thought it was who's the guy that founded the Salvation Army? William Booth. There you go. I thought it was him, but apparently Augustine, and if you're a redneck, you say Augustine of Hippo. You've said that, right? I'm going to go down to saying Augustine. Pray as if everything depends on God. Work as if everything depends on you. Like that, I think he understood that it was this beautiful balance of faith and works. Pray as if everything depends on God. Like, have faith and believe that that's the only way that we're going to make a difference, and that's the only way that your life is going to count. But then, on the other side of the coin, work as if everything depends on you. And give all of your heart and all of your effort and all of your passions, and stop turning a blind eye to people in need. I cannot fathom. I don't understand how we do this. We get so caught up. And what are we doing? We're watching TV. We're playing video games. Our eyes are buried in social media. And people are in need. And we just go on about our merry way. Like, what do you think? Like, honestly, I know this is such a cliche and cheesy thing. What do you think Jesus would say to that? Like, if you were having a conversation with Jesus and you saw, if you replayed your week and you saw all of the opportunities that you had to serve other people, which he came and gave his life to do, even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. And so your life this week was on replay, and you see all of these missed opportunities because you were busy. Like, define busy. What would Jesus say to that? I think he'd be like, "That ain't cutting it, chief." I don't know if Jesus would say chief. I don't know. I just feel like we really miss the point sometimes. And I think that faith is important. It absolutely is. It's the starting point of this religion. It's the starting point of our relationship with God. But if we don't ever have anything that backs that up, if you just continue to live your life, then you've really missed the point. Because what did Jesus say? He's like, whoever gives their life actually finds their life, and whoever keeps their life loses their life. And so I think that, man, we've really got to consider some of this stuff, and we've really got to consider the way that we live. Is it faith and works, or is it faith only? Because then I think you're missing the point. Let me pray for us. God, we love you so much. God, we are so thankful. God, that you love us enough to give us strong warnings and encouragements, God, about not getting caught up in ourselves and in our own ambitions and the things that we want to do. God, that you've helped us to see that it's not just our faith, or it's not just our belief that matters. God, it's what we do with that faith and belief that matters. God, I pray that you help us, God, to live this out, Father, like it says in James, God, that we wouldn't just be hearers of the word, but we would be doers also, God. And I think that's indicative of the culture that we live in. It's only, for some reason or another, religion is only about what you believe and not about what you do, God, and that's just stupid. It's just garbage. And I pray that you would help us to see the importance of living our Christian virtues and values out. Help us to be faith and works people. Thank you so much, God. We love you, and we ask all these things in Jesus' name. And everybody said, amen.